On today's edition of Hoops 360, Caitlin Clark is so back. And can Chicago Sky's hot start continue even after Rekia Jackson's devastating injury? Did Jose Fernandez's comments of selfishness come just a little bit too soon in the season? And how much pressure does the Portland Fire feel in their inaugural season? So much to get into, so let's do it. What is up, everybody? Welcome into the latest edition of Hoops 360. Another week into the WNBA season, and we just came into this one firing out of a cannon. We're not wasting any sort of time. We had massive big performances. We had incredibly close matchups. So on today's episode, we will highlight some of those big moments. Caitlin Clark carrying the Fever. Chicago Sky's positive start, but some bad news that we will get into and how that will affect Chicago season. And we'll also hear from Portland Fire head coach Alex Sarama on how he handles the pressure of leading a first-year expansion franchise. She is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Cass, always great to talk with you. Always great to chat with you. It was a wild little weekend. Wild little week.
You did have a wild weekend.
I also had a wild weekend. Yeah. For those who don't know, I also cover football. I'm a sideline reporter for the Indoor Football League, and it's an absolute blast. So much fun. Highly recommend you can watch it on the Yahoo Sports Network. We had a couple of games in the middle of the mall.
Let's go to the mall today.
Today, I walked into the mall, and like all of my, you know, when you got dropped off at the mall by your mom in middle school, memory started to come back. I was like, okay, I need Panda Express. I'm going to get my ears pierced. You know, I want to go get a new outfit from, you know, Victoria's Secret Pink. It was great.
Had good stores in your mall.
We did have good stores. Yeah. Not anymore. I'm pretty sure the mall that I used to go to is now demolished. RIP.
Yeah.
It's a good time. It's a good time. We'd have a great time in the WNBA, though. We saw some fun, great, close, down-to-the-wire matchups. We saw some injuries that we'll get into. But, Cass, I'll just open the floor to you. What did we like this week?
We liked a lot of things this week. But, like, let's not bury the lead. Caitlin Clark is back, very much so, watching that Washington game. And definitely notable that Aaliyah Boston missed the end of that game and then missed her first game in her professional career after that. But without her, Indiana still hung in it with a feisty Washington team. And those late three-pointers by Caitlin were just vintage in Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Felt very much like she is just back, is the easiest way to put it. She has broken quite a few records already over the first weekend. She had her fourth straight game with 20-plus points, 5-plus assists, tied for the longest streak to start a season in WNBA history. She's the first player with multiple 30-point, 10-assist games in her career. The most notable thing for me, and shout-out to Pat Boylan, the Fever play-by-play guy, who really broke this down into, like, a really chunky, just, like, stat that makes a lot of sense. It was Caitlin's 12th career game with at least 20 points and 10 assists. It broke a tie with veteran Courtney Vandersloot, who has been around the league for quite a while. And so Pat broke this down as, how often do top WNBA players record a 2010 game all time? Diana Taurasi had one in 62.8 games. Skylar Diggins had one in 42.3 games. Sloot had one in 43.6 games. Caitlin Clark has won in 4.7 games. Every fifth game, she is doing this. She's absolutely back. Obviously, the Fever's defense still a little Swiss cheesy. But offensively, and like that's what Caitlin likes to talk about, and was on Aaliyah Boston's podcast with Candace Parker this week talking about how fun the offense was. Offensively, like, the Fever are roaring.
I mean, to your point about the defense, when you score over 100 points and lose, that is clearly an issue that you need to work on twice. Like, that's almost impressive. But we knew that this Fever team was just going to have at least a little bit of a ramping up period. But we also understood, even in a ramping up period, they still have a championship ceiling. And there has been nothing that we've seen early on in the Fever to make us think any differently about that. Nor should anything that you see in the first 2 weeks of a season make your preseason picks like feel like drastically different. A reminder to everybody, it is still May 20th, okay? Long, long season ahead of us. But there is just something about watching Caitlin Clark that is so like, it's like poetry in motion. When Caitlin Clark finds some momentum, when Caitlin Clark starts to hit shots that almost feel like they defy the law of physics, it's so easy to see how she can galvanize this entire team, to see how she can, you know, either energize an entire arena or take all of the air out of an opposing arena. If Caitlin Clark can stay healthy this season, it is truly a gift to the basketball world when we get to see her firing on all cylinders.
Absolutely. She makes everyone around her better. You hear that all the time. Everyone can shine because of her. We see that. They're going to play a game this week, but she's one of the amazing young stars in this league. The other ones in Dallas, Paige Beckers and AZ Fudd, amongst many, kind of had maybe a roller coaster weekend. I believe that they are on your dislike list this week.
It's one thing I didn't like. Now, okay. I want to just clear the air here. It's not like I don't like the Dallas Wings. And look, they are 2-2. They've seen the highest of highs, like we said. You know, they beat the Indiana Fever game one. Indiana Fever scored 104 points. Wasn't quite good enough to take down this Dallas Wings team. Then they suffered a couple of losses. And then they came back and they beat the Mystics. So for a young team that has a new head coach with a lot of new pieces, we can expect to see some volatility. They're finding their momentum. They're finding their team identity. Those kinds of things just take time. So it's not the win-loss record. It's not the kind of ups and downs and peaks and valleys that we've seen from Dallas. It was more so the messaging that we heard from Jose Fernandez, their new head coach, after the Dallas Wings lost to the Minnesota Lynx 90-86. Jose Fernandez took to the podium, and this is what he had to say.
It's real talk, and it's accountability. That's what I told them. I go, there's selfishness in this locker room. There is. And, you know, you gotta look in the mirror and be accountable on how you played. And don't get upset if you think that you should have played more, or you didn't play enough, or you didn't get the shots that you think you should have gotten. Really good teams, they don't give a shit about that. You know what they give a shit about? They give a shit about winning. Because that's what matters.
Cass, what I didn't like about that, we heard Jose Fernandez saying, quote, there's selfishness in this locker room. I never have any issue with coaches calling their players out or maybe dialing up the heat a little bit on their team. We saw Becky Hammon do it more than once last season, and obviously it paid off when her team won a championship. But I just said earlier, May 20th, right? We have a lot of basketball left to be played in this season. I feel like Jose Fernandez calling his team out, calling out selfishness in the locker room, not even just, hey, we need to do more, we need to dial up the level of intensity. No, calling them out, calling that locker room selfish, I feel like it's a little bit too early in the season to start putting your team on blast like that. Because if you do it on May 20th or May, whenever this was, 18th, 17th, whatever the date was, calendars are hard. If you start doing that this early and then you continue to start to do it throughout the course of the season, that messaging starts to fall on deaf ears.
That makes sense. I'll devil's advocate this. I will say, like, totally understand that point. I love it from a media perspective because I think, like, he's been very direct and kind of, like, I don't want to say crankier than his college days, but, like, I don't know. It's been an interesting ride with Jose. Like, post game is always a roller coaster. That said, I will devil's advocate it for you. Maybe you do it this early because you don't want it to spiral out of control.
Fair.
I mean, I don't know, like, what's going on in the locker room. I don't know what's going on in the practices. Only certain portions of it are even open to media, and obviously players and coaches know what portions those are. Maybe it's something he felt very, very strongly about. I thought it was interesting when I was going over some stuff for the podcast. After, we'll we'll get to it. But after the Wings beat the Mystics, Paige Beckers had a quote, said it felt really good. She was one of five players to finish in double digits. She said, quote, "We played selfless tonight," which
so clearly she took the message.
Felt very pointed in terms of an answer to what Jose said. Now, whether he should have done that publicly or not, to your point, at this point of the season, like, I have no idea. It is definitely something we will look back on. But maybe from his perspective, he's been on teams, you know, in college where this spirals out of control. And he's like, nope, nip it in the bud now.
It's a very fair point by you. And clearly, Paige heard the message and wanted to make sure that she cleared the air there. And I think very wise word choice, or a smart word choice, or a word choice that she clearly thought about. Because, yeah, to your point, it gets late early in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want to dig yourself in a hole, and then that's when you start addressing issues. You want to start addressing it early. But I do always think that coaches, whenever they speak to the media, when they speak through a microphone, they're not talking to just you or me. Like, they, you can tell when they're talking to someone. There's a message to an individual player or to the locker room, or maybe you're speaking to ownership, or maybe you're speaking to whoever it might be. But as media, we are vehicles for messaging. We have to understand our role like that. And clearly, Jose Fernandez was talking to the locker room. Clearly, at least it sounded like they responded to it well. It will be something fascinating to focus on moving forward, as this is a team that is still trying to find its identity. This is still a young team with some veteran players. How does Jose Fernandez kind of, you know, manage that moving forward? Because I think there's only so many times you can do that publicly.
Yeah. And one of the funny things, thinking back on having watched this whole presser, someone asked him about minutes for someone, which he had been asked about after the Fever game as well. And he was like, everyone's always asking about minutes. Like, this was clearly kind of like bumping him. And there are, if you look at that roster at this point, like, so many hands to feed. Like, we talked last week, I think, a little bit about, like, maybe getting AZ Fudd was kind of like adding to the hall of riches, when usually it's a situation of you need that. There are going to be maybe less minutes for some or more minutes for others, or players who could start elsewhere, like on the bench, or who have been there for a while. Maddie Segers comes to mind in terms of just kind of talking about like what her role was on the team. A lot of mouths to feed.
A lot of mouths to feed on that team, no doubt. And I that is one reason why the Izzy Fudd pick, I think, was criticized, was you have all of these needs. Does Izzy Fudd necessarily satisfy that need? Now, look, I have no problem with the Izzy Fudd pick, but I have to imagine, you know, losing to the Minnesota Lynx, a team that drafted Olivia Miles, and Olivia Miles, who's had a fantastic start to her WNBA career, I'm sure they're starting to feel that a little bit. But I will always remind everybody, nobody made a mistake when we are 4, 5, 6 games into the season, okay? Let's pump the brakes here. I think the Dallas Wings, that we said at the beginning of the season, and I will continue to hammer it home, they will be one of the most fascinating teams to focus in on in the W. But while we're talking about things, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I don't know which one you're jumping to, but I want to jump to one thing I really like, which is the Lynx, their pick of Olivia Miles. I think we would be remiss not to note the incredible start to the season that she has had for that team. 4 games, 15.5 points per game, shooting about 50%. Her stat line includes 4.3 rebounds, 5.8 assists, 1.5 steals, 1 block, only 3 turnovers per game. Taking out the turnovers of it all, if you look at those like pure numbers, 15 points, 4 rebounds, etc., there are 2 players in the league right now averaging those numbers. Do you want to take a gander at the other one? You don't have to.
I don't know.
We already talked about her.
Caitlin
Clark.
Pretty good company to be in.
Stat stuffing point guard. So Olivia Miles on the list of what we liked, having a great start to the year. I'll kick it back to you.
We did one more note on Olivia. Yeah. We've talked about rookies that come into the league and just get it. Paige came into the league. She just got it. Caitlin came into the league, and it didn't feel like there was this college to WNBA learning curve. Olivia Miles gets it. Like, she is just, I think Sonia Citron is another one that I'll throw into that list of somebody that just came into the league so effortlessly, so flawlessly. Olivia Miles is, I mean, when you drop 21 in your first career WNBA game, like, if you continue that and consistently being a reliable shooter and a reliable scorer, like, she just feels like she is carving out her own role for her on this Lynx team. One thing I liked, and then also really quickly, one thing that I didn't, and it's in the same team. The Chicago Sky. 3-1. You cannot catch a break. Three and one. It tied for the top spot in the Eastern Division. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Second place in the league. Second place Chicago Sky.
In the
We're
league.
Saying the same thing.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, same record as the New York Liberty in the East. Yeah. When you look at Rekia Jackson, who was averaging 18 points a game, Gabby Hawkes, who had a 20-point game against Minnesota. So Chicago, it felt like they had this vision, they had this identity, and the acquisitions, bringing in Natasha Cloud, the moves that they made, they clearly thought that they had a team that could compete, that no longer was Chicago going to be the doormat of the WNBA, and it felt like, at least early, that was paying off, and that was paying dividends.
Yeah,
and then Rekia Jackson tears her ACL, and she's out for the rest of the season in a non-contact injury against Minnesota. It's like, I feel for Sky fans that finally felt like they had something good. They finally felt like they had a team that could make a run potentially this season. And then your leading scorer on the year gets hurt. And I hate that for Rekia Jackson too.
Yeah, I felt like she was in a great spot. It looked like she was in a great spot. And this is a team that I don't remember where you and I tiered them, but we did say, like, they made really good offseason additions after kind of looking like a little bit of a laughingstock with the whole Angel Reese situation, even though I think that was for the best for both of them, even at the time. Yeah. But, like, brought in good players, have Camilla to build around. They get Rekia in that trade. And it felt like for a lot of these players, it was almost like a reset situation, and they're melding so well. And it's just like, man, cannot catch a break when you're in Chicago.
I feel for them. I do. And there's all of those other pieces. You know, I mentioned Gabby Hawkes, Skylar Diggins, Camilla Cardoso. That's good for double-digit rebounds on any given night. So I don't want to say all of a sudden that the Sky's season is totally and completely ruined and over with, because there are enough pieces on this team for this team to make a run. It's just hard to imagine the ceiling being the same without Rekia Jackson than it was with her.
There's definitely an opportunity for Gabriela Hawkes. She stepped into that opportunity, I think, after Rekia left, had a great game. She's already also having a great start to her first year. You never want to see an injury, especially to a player like Rekia, who's in a new spot, has maybe a new breath of life. But unfortunately, you do have to look at it as this is the fourth game. Tyler Marsh is going to make some adjustments. Maybe I don't know what exactly their injuries look like right now. Maybe they bring in a hardship player or a developmental player or what have you. But it's a long season. To our point earlier, it can be a long season. So who, like, steps into that role that she was playing and gets even better? And maybe if this team looks the same next year and she's back and mostly healthy, you know, what does that look like when you've now added to your bench depth?
Yeah. You know, sometimes in the WNBA, you just get lucky and unlucky with injury.
Mm-hmm.
But the best teams are able to overcome despite injury, because unfortunately, it's an inevitable part of the game. Last thing that I liked, Cass, newsflash, Asia Wilson and the Las Vegas Aces are really good. They got...
Oh, no.
Who'd have thunk it? I mean, they got destroyed on ring night by the Phoenix Mercury, who are very clearly and obviously pissed off about losing in the WNBA finals. And then they have rattled off four straight. Asia Wilson with a massive 45-point game against the Connecticut Sun. And I understand it's the Connecticut Sun. But still, a 45-point night against anybody is going to be wildly impressive. Asia Wilson is averaging 25 points a game. And let me just add on top of what I think I really like, and what stood out to me, because Asia Wilson, Aces being good, hot, newsflash, hot take, Kennedy Carter. We were not doubting, but we were questioning. We were speculating about Kennedy Carter, and could Las Vegas be the place where she could really blossom and she could really shine? Because if anyone could do it, Becky Hammon could do it. Being in Vegas can do it. And now Kennedy Carter has been such a massive part of what this Aces team has done so far through five games.
Yeah, scoring has never been an issue for Kennedy. It is nice to see it translate in terms of off the bench on a team like the Aces. We're pretty early into the season, and I know that in that post game, there was clearly something going on. She kind of walked out of it, said she was disappointed. Becky Hammon had talked about, in terms of if Kennedy was disappointed that she wasn't on the court late in the game, Becky Hammon had said, you know, she wanted to go with just a bigger lineup, had nothing to do with her. That's how she was going to close out the game against this dream team specifically, which was a really good ending to that game. So while I think that Kennedy Carter, like, the good part of it is she is scoring and she is producing off the bench and being a key asset to this Las Vegas Aces team and what they already have, it's early, and I do want to see, like, how this all plays out and make sure it is still meshing well.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's going to be adversity. Any team, even Las Vegas Aces, are going to face adversity throughout the course of a season. We saw it last year on the course to a championship. How can they keep the path? That is what we liked and what we didn't like this past week in the WNBA. Another thing that I liked from this past week in the W was Cass's most recent article. You can find it on yahoosports.com. The headline reads, WNBA's Wealth Moment, how players are spending their higher salaries and saving for, quote, when the ball stops bouncing. This, I think, was a fascinating look into the business side of it, right? We know the new CBA. We know that players are now making more money than they ever have before. But it's how do you set yourself up for success financially when you're 40, 50 years old, when you've already retired from the W and when you're no longer, you know, enjoying the fruits of the CBA that was most recently passed. So Cass, break it down for us. What really stood out to you from your research and all of the conversations that you had? And there's some great nuggets from big time stars in this article.
Well, first of all, thank you. I'm always really interested in the money aspect. And like one of the big questions I had was for a lot of players who made maybe around 150 to 200,000, specifically in the W we're talking, what happens when suddenly your annual salary is 1.2 million? Like, how do you treat that? What do you do? Suddenly you have so much money. And we always have these stories of NFL players and NBA players going bankrupt or rookies just spending all their cash. So the one person who really, I think, shaped this story was Adewale Ogunleye. He was an NFL player, played for the Dolphins, a rookie there in 2001. He's now the executive director and head of sports and entertainment at UBS Financial Services. He was the first person I talked to an entire month ago. He gave me like 25 minutes immediately after he got off a plane. So I'm very grateful for him just kind of going over all of this. But he actually has a pretty similar story. So when he was a rookie, he was on a split contract. He was injured. He made about $100,000. He watched all these guys around him buy expensive cars and all of these nice things. But then he also saw the flip side where there's foreclosed homes, or he saw people around them wanting things from this person who suddenly has a lot and they feel like maybe can give it away to them. By the time he made his big salary, it was about 5 years into his career, he was making on average $5.5 million a year. And so his big thing, as well as Nakia Sanford Lawson, who I spoke with, a former WNBA player who is now a financial analyst, they tell their clients all the time, like, live like you still live. Don't live outside of your means. Like, follow the budget that you've had. Maybe you can splurge on something, but really be thinking about not necessarily spending all of that extra money, I spoke to some players who have bought cars because we all love cars and I'm all about it. I feel like a car is just, you buy what represents you. But they also talked a lot about working with financial advisors, putting it into 401ks. I had a one-on-one with Raven Johnson, who told me that she, and this is before she was drafted to the Fever, she has real estate holdings in Atlanta, near her hometown of Atlanta, because her financial agency had helped her do that. And it's a huge investment. Like, these players are spending their money in ways that is going to help them in the long run. The last thing I'll kind of say, just to like kick off this conversation, is as much as it was about salaries, it was also about benefits. So your 401k, which is a 140% match, which is huge. Player programs, family planning that can cost a lot. And then retired players can also tap into some of these programs for the first time in this new CBA.
That it's fascinating because it's an unsexy part of the business that we don't talk about enough. We see these flashing, gaudy numbers and these contracts, not just in the W, but in sports in general. And it's you got to do something with it now, especially for a player that, like you said, has gone from making, you know, 5 to 6 figures to 7 figures to now all of a sudden you have $1 million. What about taxes? What about investments? What about saving? You know, it's not, you don't just learn, as soon as you become a millionaire, you don't just know all of those things about investments and protecting all of your assets. So you need someone that you trust that can do that. There was one part of your article that really stood out to me. And this was a player who said, I have $10,000. And like came to an investment account to invest. She's like, I have a comma in the amount of money that I have. So like I'm walking in, swaggy walking, I'm a rich girl. And he's like, yeah, no. You need at least 5 times that to even open an account here. So I think that's another thing is the perspective of, you know, you might be coming out of college or you might be making now $150,000 when you were previously making $40,000. That's a massive leap maybe for you. And $150,000 is nothing to scoff at. That's a lot of money. But in the grand scheme of things, maybe in the grand scheme of the league, in the grand scheme of being a professional athlete, that's pennies.
I'm so glad that stuck out to you because that was Nikia Sanford Lawson, was great to talk to. I laughed on the phone when she told me that because I also like felt it. And she told me this whole story of she gets dressed up, like she's going down the street in D.C. and she can tell when she walks in, they're kind of like, oh, like, what are you doing here? And the financial advisor has to tell her, like, we can't work with you. And that was complete news to me when Adewale told me that. And the UBS guys kind of explained to me that there are different tiers and levels of financial advising when you have money. And there are certainly banks that will advise you if you have $50,000 in the bank. But there are advisors who will, as she experienced, will not work with you if you don't have that type of money. So as WNBA players are making more money in salary, they're also opening up more and more opportunities to have this type of higher investment help and really set them up for when the ball stops bouncing. Because as all of these people told me, including Jane Apollo Marinelli, who works at the WNBPA, like you, it does no matter your name. And you have to know what your money is going to do for you and what comes next afterward.
And there was another part of your article, and I don't want to give away everything. You have to go read it yourself. But when Chamika Holtzclaw said, I would say there's a majority of these young ladies who may be the first person in their family is making this type of money, and so they need someone to educate them on it. That's another really difficult aspect of this is the family aspect, your friends aspect. I did radio for a long time with a former NFL player in the league for 15 years. Made a lot of money in playing in the NFL. And he came from humble beginnings. And he said, all of a sudden, when the checks started to come in, when I started to play well, cousins, family friends, aunts and uncles, friends, just people that he hadn't talked to in a long time, coming out of the woodwork. Hey, can I have some money to pay my rent this month? Hey, can I have some money to pay my mortgage? Hey, can I have some money for, you know, whatever it might be? And it might sound really innocent there, like, hey, I promise I'll pay you back. Hey, it's only a little bit here and there. But he said, I had to, whenever I made it big, that was the sacrifice that I had to make, cutting a lot of people out of my life because my only commitment is to my wife and my children. Like, that is it. Like, and if I give out money, if I pay these $10,000 loans here and there, which doesn't sound like a lot when you're making tens of millions of dollars, that really starts to add up. And then people still come by, okay, again, I'll pay you back again. I'll pay you back again. They keep coming back and asking for more money. So that's another unintended consequence of making more money, is having to have really difficult conversations with people who may be looking at you with just big dollar signs in your eyes.
I asked a few people about this specifically, and I said, like, do you notice a difference between men's athletes and women's athletes when it comes to that specifically? And a lot of them, including Wale, told me, you know, Cassandra, it's not about gender. It's about how much money you have. And so as WNBA players are making more money, and we see this at the college level too, right? Like, all of these players making big money in NIL. When I looked up numbers, Flage's valuation, I think, was like $1.5 million. You have people around you who want that money. You think of, like, when you win the lottery, like, how many people suddenly come out of the woodwork or want to manipulate you or use you for money? That's just, it's definitely an athlete problem, but it's also an issue whenever you have tons of cash.
Yeah. Yeah, money is nameless and faceless and genderless and raceless. It's just, hey, when the money is there, people are going to come. And we've seen some brilliant businesswomen come out of the WNBA. Candace Parker, Sylvia Fowles. The list goes on and on and on of players that have continued to make money and build upon their brands. It's going to be fascinating to see in this iteration and this generation of the WNBA. I look at Shaq. He's like the perfect example of Shaq. Michael Jordan is another one, you know, capitalizing on the Jordan brand. Athletes that have been able to make even more money after they're done playing than they did when they were in the league, and just making smart business decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Highly recommend. Go give it a listen. Go give it a read. Cass is always, you know, producing wonderful, wonderful works on yahoosports.com. So go give it a read on yahoosports.com. All right, last week we had the opportunity to talk to Portland Fire head coach Alex Sarama. He is a first-time head coach in his own career. He came over from the NBA ranks, spent some time with the Cleveland Cavaliers as the director of player personnel. Now he's putting his own DNA and putting his own ideas into action on the W with the Portland Fire. But there is inherently pressure that may exist for Toronto and for Portland, for any new expansion teams coming in, because the Golden State Valkyries have set the bar incredibly high in terms of business. According to Forbes, Golden State is now the highest valued WNBA franchise in just its second year. But also in terms of basketball as well, Golden State made the postseason last year in their inaugural season. So what kind of pressure does Alex Sarama feel as a first-time head coach for an inaugural team? This is what he had to say. How much, maybe pressure isn't the right word, but I'll use it anyway. How much pressure maybe do you and the front office feel as an expansion team coming in the year after the Golden State Valkyries had as much basketball and business success as they had in their inaugural season?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting point on the Golden State comparison, and kind of how I view it is I think it's so different for a multitude of reasons. I think firstly, it's the fact that we have two more teams changes things completely, especially when you're considering like playoff spots, things of that nature, as well as a one team versus a two team expansion draft, which is a huge fundamental shift. So for me, it's we're being really intentional, especially, you know, with the team. Just all we can control is us and every single day and the next game. And for me, I feel more pressure to establish a great identity and the cultural piece, which is going to set us up here for long-term success. You know, we're second youngest team in the league after Washington, and a bunch of those young players. You look at players like Carla, Nadia, they're going to be a huge part of what we're doing this season, playing heavy minutes. So it's more, it's essential that we set the program and get the foundation right. And establish the traits and behaviors which are going to set us up for success 2-3 years from now. And I think we're starting to see that already in terms of like the grit, the resiliency, the connectedness of the group. That's the way it's got to be. And that's why I've been so proud of the group. I do think we've imposed kind of what we're trying to do on both sides of the ball. So that's kind of a long-winded answer, but it's more, we got to get the culture and the foundations right this year. And that's what we got to make sure we're doing a great job of every single day.
All right, Cass, that was Alex Rama there, Portland Fire head coach. What were some of your takeaways from what he had to say?
Well, first of all, it's always fun to like know a little bit more about these coaches. He has a pupper back in England. So he does. That was my first takeaway with
Marley.
His parents. Yeah. I was taken by how he's approaching his time with Portland and coaching. Like, we've heard a lot about his philosophies, how he's going to do things. As I asked him, you know, during the interview last week, like, we're seeing all of these just different coaching techniques come out of practice. And I think when you and I kind of talked a little bit about it afterwards, you know, like, all of this, I think, lends into the idea for me that these franchises need to be here to stay, and they're all going to operate differently. And I think for Portland, like, I think a lot about how this is a previous franchise. Like, they played in the league for 3 years. They were an expansion franchise then. They're an expansion franchise again now. Yes, it's an incredible women's city. But with all of these expansion franchises coming in, we want to see them stay. So how can you build and grow year after year so that you have holding power where you are? You know, they're not necessarily going to try and win a championship in 5 years. Maybe that's too much pressure. But putting in these foundations and maybe being a little different and playing with systems so that you can be, you know, on the forefront of this and keep a team in town.
It was fascinating. You brought up, you know, the practicing in socks and different things like that, you know, daring to be different. I think that's what's so beautiful about an expansion franchise is, look, Golden State did what they did, and that was fantastic, and that was wonderful. To expect every expansion franchise to do that, I think, is unfair. So now what Alex Rama has, what Toronto has, is the opportunity to go into a season with no expectations, which allows you the opportunity to experiment a little bit, to do something different, to throw something at the wall, see if it sticks. And if it does, great, keep doing it. And if it doesn't, okay, why didn't it work? How can we diagnose it? How can we be better? You don't always have that time for experimentation in professional sports because everybody expects everyone every year to win a championship. So when you feel that pressure, when you, the heightened expectations get to you, you don't really get to experiment and try something new and see if something sticks. You just have to keep rolling with what's working. I also love how Alex Rama said, no, right now what we're focused on, expectations, noise, what everybody expects of us, that's one thing. So we just want to build a culture. We just want to build who the Portland Fire is. We want to build a foundation of, you know, core players, core values, and then the wins will come after that. I think that's a very wise way to approach all of it. Because if you just try and do what everyone else expects of you, if you just try and follow a blueprint, well, that might not necessarily work for you. So I thought Alex Rama was just brilliant and was really fascinating to listen to.
Yeah, I like that final point that he was fascinating to listen to, because the one thing I was thinking about as you were talking there was, like, obviously we just talked about me being a writer, and there's an incredible value to seeing something on the page and it being written. But to read a quote from him is different than hearing a quote from him in the way that we were able to speak to him. And there's not a lot of, like, corporate speak, if you will. You could tell there were certain points he wanted to hit because that's always, you know, we do the same thing when we're preparing, like, oh, yeah, I want to talk about that. But you could feel like his passion for this system and approach that he wants to implement, right? And so you could feel like the passion coming through the screen, and hopefully you all watching that interview felt it as well. And I think that's incredibly important too when you're starting a franchise like this in a place as passionate as Portland at a time in the WNBA when there are so many expansion teams coming on board and it's such an exhilarating moment. You don't want anything to dampen that.
Yeah. Definitely. You know, I do think there is a certain element sometimes that we might see of like used car salesmen. Of we're just trying to get people to buy into this. We want to sell tickets. You're like pushing all of these things. You're selling it. Didn't get that at all from him at all. Just this level of the sense of quiet confidence of we're doing what we're doing and we're really proud of it and we're doing it together. He talked a lot about Sylvia Fowles, how he and her are in lockstep. They do a lot of things together. They're on the same page. The coaching staff bought into it because he addressed it when he brought up like the socks and the different things that they're trying. Like, you know, to the team, like how long did it take for the team to be like, what the heck are we doing? Was the coaching staff like, who is this crazy person doing all of these crazy things? But he said the coaching staff, Sylvia Fowles, I love that he called her Syl. I thought that was precious. And the team all bought into it and they're all on board for this. And that can be a hurdle sometimes for new teams. It doesn't sound like it is for Portland.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up today's episode on the pod, Cass, who would you like to spotlight this week on your spotlight of the week?
My spotlight of the week. So many things to spotlight. But I do want to talk about the Atlanta Dream. We spoke about them briefly. I caught the end of that game. The ball movement was incredible. The comeback, amazing. A lot of questions were asked about the environment because they were in State Farm Arena in downtown Atlanta, which holds about 20,000 people, which is quick math, like seven times as many as their regular arena holds, 5 to 7.
And they sold it out. Sellout.
They sold out. They sold it out. Like, it was an Aces game, like broken record here. But the Dream are going to be contenders this year. If they don't win it this year, or even if they do win it this year, I guess, like, they're going to be contenders next year. Having been there last year and kind of briefly talked with some business people there, like, we talked a little bit about car salesmen. Like, they can spin it as an intimate environment in the arena that they're in. And surely there are some assets to that, I guess. But as Beckingham and also said, I think everyone knows that they need to get into a bigger arena. That's also going to boost like WNBA attendance numbers, which have been a little suppressed by some of these teams playing in smaller arenas. But they are my spotlight because I just thought it was an incredible, fun, lovely environment. It was better to watch on TV. And I think moving forward, I'm excited for them to continue playing in bigger arenas and maybe long term look at moving out of where they are to continue to have that environment. I think the players deserve it. The fans deserve it. Atlanta deserves it.
And the game delivered.
Yeah.
Big stage, reigning champs, reigning league MVP. You pack the place out and then you saw the comeback, the attempted comeback just came just short. But for Atlanta to not bow out, to not tuck their tail between their legs, but to be able to mount a near comeback like that against a team like Vegas, I thought it was an absolute blast. I mean, you have celebrities on that team and Atlanta, you know, needs to showcase them as such.
Did not have Ryan Howard in that one either. We will throw in there.
Yes. Yes. Love what I've seen early from the Dream.
What you got?
Player spotlight of the week. I'm going to give some love to Brittany Sykes because I'm feeling, you know, all warm and fuzzy about expansion teams. The Toronto Tempo. Brittany Sykes is averaging 26 points a game. They had a back-to-back with L.A. They dropped that first game. In the second game, they take down L.A. In L.A., might I add, because that is not an easy road trip to go from L.A. or from Toronto to L.A., crossing three time zones, crossing countries. Brittany Sykes puts up 38 points, 15 of 15 from beyond from the free throw line, 3 of 8 from beyond the arc. Brittany Sykes and Marina Mabry, both in that million-dollar backcourt, continue to deliver. Toronto's two leading scorers. So all I want to highlight Brittany Sykes for that game against LA. That's my player spotlight of the week. Brittany Sykes and Marina Mabry, both are huge for Toronto. They've been fun to watch.
The millionaire backcourt. They have an incredible night the other night. While we're talking tempo, though, Sandy Brondello was on Richard Deitch's podcast, and I found it interesting that the things she talked about in terms of the expansion draft was she knew that they really wanted Julie Alamand. Her time in Toronto, I think, has been, you know, pretty strong in terms of running the offense. But on the flip side of that, I think there's a lot of talk now about what she did for Los Angeles that is not there right now. So just moving forward, I want to continue to see just the dichotomy of this.
Yeah, That's a great point by you. Also, I mentioned the long road trip. They had a back-to-back against LA, then they're in Phoenix, and then they have a fourth road game in Minnesota before they head back to Toronto. Oof, rough stretch for them.
Well, at least all their VPNs right, and they can watch Netflix.
That is so
true. Did you see this by Marina? This was very funny.
Wait, no, what did she say?
She was asked in LA, I think, like, what are the difficulties of playing in Canada or something, you know, because there is a lot that's different. I think that's a fascinating aspect. But she, in a very Marina way, I think, said, like, it wasn't that bad, but, like, she's really mad at her VPN because she can't get streaming services to work.
She can't get her shows.
I know. That's been, like, a top thing.
If we have a long road trip like that, a girl has got to be able to download some episodes of Running Point on Netflix, okay? It's a good show. It's cute.
Great reference, because there is some Toronto in season two.
There is some Toronto in season two. And it is it's so hilariously, like, stereotypically Canada. Like, I don't know what month it's supposed to be, but it's, like, snowing all the time in this
I'm gonna tell Toronto you right now, world. Yeah, it makes no sense. Like, y'all are Canada haters.
It's, like, always dark in the office, too. Like, everyone's always wearing sweaters. I'm like, surely it's nice at least at some time in Toronto. Not in the Running Point universe, though.
I didn't see a single Tim Hortons cup. They should have been advertising.
Copyright issue.
Probably.
Can't get those Probably Canadian Starbucks. Ad dollars. I do love that show. It's a cute little show.
It's a good show. It's a good show.
It's good. All right. Other than Running Point. Some other things that we'll be watching this week. We've got Fire Fever tonight. We're recording this podcast on Wednesday. So Wednesday night at 7 o'clock Eastern time. Like we mentioned, anytime we get a chance to see Caitlin Clark, we will be tuning into our TVs. And a great test for this Portland Fire team. They've been in some crazy environments since the beginning of the season. So yet another test for them. Anything in particular looking out for that game, Cass?
From Fire Fever, I like the intensity of the names here.
It's very hot.
I'm looking for how the Fever do with Aaliyah Boston back on the court. I want to see them just play incrementally better defense. Steph said this at the onset. We've said this a million times. They can't just get into shootouts with teams and expect to win. So can they play enough defense in certain points to get the win? I don't care like what the final score is, but need a little more defense, Caitlin.
Yeah. That's very fair to point out. We've also got an inaugural team on Saturday. Fire hits the road going to Toronto. Cute little babies. Their first year. That's another thing that we're going to be watching. Any other games that I didn't point out that you're going to be tuning into this week?
No, I like these two. And I think for the Fire tempo, like, this is one of those matchups that it's so weird. We've talked about like how you put things into history, but this is a matchup that actually is a first because the Tempo are a first year league. Obviously, technically, the Fire have played the Fever before. The old iteration of the Fire.
Technically.
Oh, wait, no. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
There's a statute of limitations on these things. And that
But that's the confusion.
There is going to be, like, because I said so many times, like, first ever head coach of the, it's just
hard.
It's just the first time in a long time. They just had to go away for a little bit, and now they're back.
Like, if you go to their basketball reference page, it's like Portland Fire, 2000 to 2026.
Yep, but.
I know.
It's almost like we have to just take the history and put it in a little box and tie it up in a nice little ribbon and put it to the side. And then we're starting new because it's just
so interesting.
It is. It is. It's a little quirk that we have this season. All right. If you saw anything in the W this past week that we did not touch on, we are always here for you. Leave a comment down below if you're watching on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. But just a reminder, you can always listen on your preferred podcast platform as well. She is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Appreciate you for stopping by.